Welcome back to the Sweat Elite podcast. It's Matt here, the founder at Sweat Elite and co-host of the Sweat Elite podcast. Thank you for tuning into this episode. This episode is another episode of Hang With, where I hang out with a professional athlete, coach, or figure of the sport. In this case, I hang out with an athlete, a coach, and a figure of the sport, once again, same as last week, in Peter Bromka. Many of you would be familiar with Peter Bromka, especially if you are from the United States, and especially if you are in the marathon scene. I have been a fan of Peter Bromka since 2018 when I discovered his blog. And in my opinion, I think that his writing is some of the best on the internet about marathon running. Peter Bromka's website is called Writing on Running, and I strongly suggest you check it out if you are a runner. You don't have to be a marathon runner. There is plenty about running in general. He does write a lot about the Boston Marathon. He is also very good on Instagram and on Strava. And I really enjoyed this conversation live in person with Peter Bromka in Boulder when I was there a couple of weeks back on a content trip. And I'd never met Peter before this. We'd exchanged messages for years about different content ideas. Peter connected me with a couple of people in the media space a few years ago. And I think one way that many people listening to this might know Peter Bromka is via his experience in trying to qualify for the 2020 Olympic Games trials. So for those not familiar, in 2020, the Olympic Games standard to run at the trials was sub 2:19.00. And Peter Bromka attempted to run 2:19.00 or faster on three attempts and ran 2:19 every time, but didn't get the 2:19.00 or faster. I won't go into it in this intro because Peter talks all about it in this podcast episode, but he documented that experience so beautifully, so well. And that's when I really started to read his blog a lot more because I just noticed that the way he wrote was very inspiring. I learned a hell of a lot about running. And yeah, that's enough for me in this intro. You'll learn much more once I switch over to the conversation that I had with Peter in person. So this recording was on March 29th. So it was about 2.5, closer to 3 weeks before the Boston Marathon. This podcast is coming out after the Boston Marathon. So we speak a little bit to the Boston Marathon. Of course, this was obviously done beforehand. And before I transition over to the conversation with Peter Bromka, I want to say a huge thank you to the sponsor of the Hang With series, one of Sweat Elite's key brand partners, Precision Fuel and Hydration. They are my favorite nutrition brand. I use their gels, their carb chews, their electrolyte tablets, and their drink mix every single week in marathon training. It's pretty much every single day. And I highly recommend their products. I have never come across a brand that is so consistent, and I guess I think many people have a hard time with taste, especially with gels when they're in the marathon. And one thing that I think is a really strong consensus, at least among people that I know, is Precision Fuel and Hydration stuff you never get tired of the taste. And I think that's a really important thing, especially if you're going to consume 4, 5, 6, 7 gels in a marathon that I do. So I'm a huge fan of their gels, their carb chews, which I've spoken about before, their drink mix and their electrolyte tabs. And you can score 15% off your first order by using the code SWEATELITE at checkout over on their website. And you can find a link in the description of this podcast episode that will take you straight there with the 15% off discount. So you can find that in the link in the description of this podcast. And I hope that you will check them out if you are preparing for a marathon anytime soon or even a shorter distance. But that's enough from me in this intro. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with one of the best writers on the internet, Peter Bromka. Peter Bromka, welcome to the Sweat Elite podcast. We're in person. I'm stoked to have you here. We met for the first time yesterday, but we connected probably over 5 years ago.
So many years ago. Yeah, time has flown by. I felt like we had known each other, but realized, yeah, when we shook hands yesterday, it was the first time. Yeah, super happy to be here. I've been obviously watching your journey, and like I complimented you yesterday, it's been quite the diversification, the global travel. So it's really cool. But for me, it's always started with like your love for the marathon. I was like, man, this guy really loves this thing that I also love. So let's just geek out about that. And yeah, it's been fun to, I'm like happy to be here and also a big fan of the stuff you guys are up to.
We geeked out for about 2.5 hours yesterday and now we're recording more geeking out. But yeah, appreciate the kind words. And I have read most of your articles. You already probably know that. But I think the thing that I'd love to speak so much to today is you're currently writing a book. So we'll speak about that. But a lot of people would probably know you for the story that happened in 2019 and 2020.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm not going to say anymore. I'm going to let you roll into that. But that was so inspiring to me because firstly, obviously, the times you were running were the times that I had in mind to try and run mm-hmm. soon. But just the drama of the time you were trying to hit and the amount of times you came so close. I'm going to leave it at that. You go.
Oh, man.
I reckon you should start from the beginning.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you say 2019, 2020, the thing I try to remind people is, that was 2017 to 2020 was really like what I call like when I blacked out and I just went dark and trained my face off and with friends and lived essentially the dream. There's times when, so like you mentioned, in 2020, at the end of the year, I wrote an essay called The Bubble of a Dream, where I documented the 3-year journey to chasing the Olympic trial standard of 219.00. And I had written essays. So starting back in 2014, I ran the Chicago Marathon, and I'd always been a writer. I like blogged about stuff back when blogging was a bigger thing, but I run the Chicago Marathon. I run 236. And I'm like, that might be the fastest I ever run. That was the most beautiful day. It had all these threads going on with my life. And I wrote an essay and put it up on medium.com. And it's hard for people to appreciate now because it's 8 years ago. The internet was simpler back then. And the thing just went around the world. I put it on Facebook, like put it like an Instagram. I don't even think there were stories up yet. Put a post
up. I think so, yeah.
And I was like, here's an essay about my experience. And for whatever reason, I was inspired to write about it as an essay for others to consume, not too much of like, I always say like, I love a good running blog, like landed at 7:45, but I was inspired to craft it as an essay to set it in the greater context of like why it meant so much to me. And I wrote like a glorified race report, like mile by mile, but just like all the emotions. And anyone can appreciate this. Like I wanted to run 6:559s. And when I found the pack in Chicago, like around mile 10, and there's just, I like saw them ahead of me and I was like, those are the dudes. And I'm like, what are you guys running? They're like sixes. I'm like, cool. And I was just like magic. So I just wanted to write about that. I wrote about that. I went around the world. People were like, this is so inspiring. And I'm like, thanks so much. And so I had gotten into a rhythm of writing essays about marathons. I wrote one in 2016 called 9,000 Seconds because I broke 2:30 at Boston for the first time ever. I always tell people this, don't declare your goal to break 2:30 at Boston for the first time because there's so many variables that can definitely go wrong. But I did, and it worked out, and I still am super thankful. It was an Olympic year, 2016, so there weren't many Americans there. So I finished 31st overall, 10th American, and was like, mind blown. Just that's the best I will ever run, ever, anything, ever. So I think there's themes of I was able to be deeply grateful for all of these days along the way, which I always encourage people, like people who can skip to the end, but I eventually start chasing 219. And I have people write me from around the world and say, I want to run 219 too also. And I'm like, well, if you're on, they're like 245. And I'm like, dude, that's like looking down on Christmas and being like, I'm not going to open any of those gifts. Like, whatever. I only care about that one gift. And I'm like, open up all the gifts, like break 240, go after it, enjoy it. And I almost backed into, I'm realizing in hindsight, like deep appreciation for these interstitial milestones. Just because I didn't have any, so I didn't know if I would ever run faster. I had grown up a runner. I like to say I burnt myself out in college extensively. Just that was early 2000s. There weren't YouTube videos. There wasn't Instagram knowledge. There was some message boards and we were like digging around and would just try to, we just trying to do everything. I was so injured and all that stuff that I came back to running in 2013, competitive running, and was had injured running hovering in my brain. It's just don't do that again. Like you hate life when you're like that. So I was able to keep things like a little in check. And then, yeah, I run like 234, 229, 228. And literally I wrote one of my favorite essays in the fall of 2017. I'm like, it's called Why Faster. And I'm just like, I've run 228. Like what else is there? Like 227, 226. And then we just fucking throw caution in the wind and run 223. And I'm like, holy shit.
What was your goal that day? Did you have one?
It was almost like my goal was don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to go through in 111, 112.
I love that.
Because in training, we had gone through at 111.30, 3 weeks out. And I was like, what if we do that in a race? You do it on your home training course and you do it with perfect fuel and the weather was nice. And I'm like, and literally one guy who, it was his first marathon. He was like, so we'll go through in 114, 115. And I'm like, sure. Yeah. But come with us. And I like just straight lied to him. And literally there's this great moment where coming through half, I knew a guy, a friend of mine was on the sideline. And he's just like, Bronco, what are you doing? Because he didn't expect us to be there for two more minutes. So we got out and I think I ran like 111.30, 112.30 or something. I ended up running 223 low. And it was just like, we just PR'd by 5 minutes, threw caution to the wind. It's hard. This is where the benefit of a pack. And this is why I want to write about it. I was so fortunate. So it's 3 miles to go. It's CIM. I'm like, I'm so far ahead of schedule. It gets really hard and you're like, legs are like lead. And then my teammate passes me again. He's like, fight for every place. And I'm like, I want to fight for every place. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I want to, I've already got a good one going. Let me just throw a pity party and run 224. He's like, we got to go. So I'm fuck. So we run 223 low. And one of my buddies runs 221 that day. And they're just like, what's up? We're going to try to break 219. And I'm like, no, like, it's going to be so hard. And we had 2 years to try to run under the trials standard. And I was just like, I don't even know how to get my mind around that. And my wife actually one time was like, what's this trials thing people are talking about? I'm like, don't worry about it. It's totally ridiculous.
Like, originally, you just wrote off the idea of actually
being able to do it. And this is where I talk about, we're a group of friends. I want to write about it in longer form because I'm like, we could have been like pickleball buddies or pick up basketball. But the beauty of the sport is the digits are clear. And they're like, I think your friends are like, hey, we're going to go want to do this thing. We're going to hit all the best golf courses in North America. You'd be like, yeah, man, I want to do that with you. Let's keep it rolling. So they're like, we're not going to run a spring marathon in 2018. We're going to just go deep into training. I'd never run 100 miles in a week. And so I was like, which is just, I love talking to someone who's not from America because I'm like, 100 miles is just like such a different number here. It just hovers over your brain. I'm such a baby. I've never run triple digits. So I built up to that and ran 68 low in the half that spring. And you're like, great. We're going to have to split like just slower than that.
Yeah. Because to run under two, your goal was to run under 219.
219 will get you an invitation to run at the trials in Atlanta, which at the time I was like, I'd run New York, I'd run Chicago, I'd run Boston a bunch of times. And I was like, I just don't know what else there is to do with this. Is my favorite thing to do. And I'm not sure what else there is to do with this. And so it was a freeing moment of let's just go all in on this goal. And so we just start dialing in the training. And I've written about like the beautiful training environment of having friends where we knew we couldn't do everything together. One guy was running triple digits. One guy would go swimming 2 days a week. Like we would just all do. And then we would just meet up and just throw down twice a week. And it all leads up to 2018 where my buddy, Patrick, closest training partner, runs 217.40, just has lights out. Like the weather in CIM that year, 2018, was perfect. It was the US champs. So you just get these packs. For those listening globally, like the US champs in the marathon is a second tier race because obviously the best pros in America go to the marathon majors, get paydays. So you get some guys who maybe could win a little prize money and then just a lot of the next tier of men. So literally we cross through halfway, 48 in 2018. And I turned to Patrick and I'm like, congrats. Cause he had just PR'd in the half. And he's like, you asshole. He runs 68.48, 68.52.
Wow.
For a 217.40. And you're like, what? I fade because I ran his race but I run 219.40. And I'm like, what? I never thought I'd be a sub 220 marathoner. But again, only getting there through just like lights out, trying to stay with friends. Just I turned my watch away with a 10K to go in that race and was just like, nothing to see there. Nothing. There's not going to be any good news. I'm like, yeah. And I'm just like, go. And then before I got to the airport that year, I was like, let's do it again. And people were texting me. They're like, you're on a heater. I want to train with you. Let's do it. We got one more year to go. I spelled out in this essay, The Bubble of a Dream, where I'm like, I spend the next year, I go to Boston and use it as I think of it as a training environment that's, you can't just be staring at 218 pace. And I've actually been messaging with guys who've tried to qualify for the trials this past year. And they're like, man, it's so tiring to just be staring at those splits and your mind's telling you anything slower than whatever pace is like worthless. Anything faster is okay. And anything else is. A lot of guys I know who tried to make the trials last year are like maybe pursuing longer stuff or shorter stuff. And they're just like, it's just a really intense period, which we can get to because I end up syncing up in 2019 with Thomas Rivers Pusey. And he, at this point, is just like a total crusher. He is like essentially a pro athlete influencer, as I like to say. My wife, what's the deal with him? And I'm like, he's a really good guy, really good athlete, really attractive. She's like, you're attractive. And I'll like show him this photo. She's damn, he's really. There's a photo of us standing on the starting line at the Elite Field at Boston. And he would crop his like singlet and put his bib up a little high. And you're just like, oh, you have like 27 abdominals. It's like, and he also lived in Flagstaff and would just be super tan. I run, again, just trying to stay with my friends, trying to honor the fitness I had. I run 223 at Boston, finish like in 32nd place or something, and just lives like, whoa, how did that happen? But I'm not even thinking about that much because I'm just like, we're training and the real goal is December, CIM. So then we like take a little down cycle and then just pretty quickly click into a full build of just so locked in training where thankfully we practiced the rhythm of it. So I wasn't questioning too much and knock on wood in the hindsight, like I didn't get injured and I'm just like, thank the fucking Lord. But yeah, it leads up to like best race of my life, lights out execution at CIM, turn the corner. Oh, actually hit a quarter mile to go. And my buddies are like, just screaming, you gotta go. Because at this point we split a little bit slower, 69, like 12 or 13. So like a little under pace, a 69:30 would technically be 219 pace flat. And yeah, sure enough, I turn the corner, kick home, and I can see I need to get 75 meters in 10 seconds. And it takes me like 12 seconds. So I throw myself across the line. I found a video where you can see that with five, like it'd be so easy. And this is why I feel like there's so many more stories to tell. It'd be easy to say like, I blacked out, I don't remember it, or it was all a blur. But if you look at the video with five steps to go, I wince because I know that the clock has just rolled over. And I take five more steps and I throw myself across the line, which is like so ridiculous. It's so, and I describe it as if you've ever left your wallet or like a backpack on a train and the doors close and it pulls away and you're like, no, like you just fucked up. Like
I have done that once.
Yeah. And you're like,
it's devastating.
Like maybe not, maybe you turn to your girlfriend, like maybe she has it. And you're like, she doesn't have my backpack. Like, my buddy works for CIM and he was standing at the finish in a vest and I'm like, a baby, but like, I don't actually recall what I said to him. You know, there's gun time, chip time. So I was like, maybe it took me 5-6 seconds to get across the starting.
That's what I would have been thinking.
Yeah. But I was like pretty far up front, just behind the pros. And I was like, it didn't take me 6 seconds. Then like Poetic Beauty, this timing system like kind of craps out. So no one really knows. Or like the online one, like the system was fine.
So we were split to there, except the result?
Yeah, it's just like people can't even get into the website.
Oh, okay.
They're like, I think I saw he almost got close. Everyone's celebrating. In crazy turn of events, a friend, Jody Bailey, a photographer from Canada, had been like, Peter, I would love, 6 months before I'd been like, I'd love to come document your build up to CIM. And I'm so like dialed at this point that I'm like, yeah, man, that'd be great. Like he came and stay with me. He took photos of my final training runs. He travels with me. And then he like hustles his face off to both be out on course and then takes a photo of me laying on the ground. Let's just say, fast forward 2 years, I'm at Grandma's Marathon and we're standing by the start. And this woman goes, oh, hey, Peter Bronkman. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, I have a photo of you on my gym wall. And I'm like, am I laying on the ground?
No.
She's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. Uh-huh. Because I was just like totally dejected. And it had a little bit of poetic, like it had just rained just a little bit,
yeah.
Which we can get into. I say to people, like, I'm not big on excuses, but I think to stay sane, you have to be okay with explanations. I say the weather was perfect in 2017 and 2018, because in 2019, it got like a little humid. And it's not to say, it's just,
make a big difference. Yeah.
I'm like, people are like, how could you have broken 219? You ran 219.02, which we know the unroad racing, they round up. So it's like 219.015. And I'm like, it would have helped if it was a little less humid, but it's just these things. So then I had met Tommy Rives before at Boston 2019. I see him at Elite Check-In, Elite Bottle stuff at CIM that year. And I've heard other people say, he says he'll go up to people who are within the scene and he's, hey man, nice to meet you. I swear I'm not as douchey as I seem online, because he feels very self-conscious about how he has to put himself out there, like in all his beauty and regalia to sell shoes and to be an ambassador. But he's a very soft-spoken, like kind man, and just wants to connect deeply as like peer to peer. And so like he was using CIM. He didn't actually believe he could probably break 219, but he was kind of race his way towards fitness. I'll see how long I can last. And then I'm really going to make my final attempt at Houston. So within this blurry 5 minutes where I'm like up, I'm talking to my dad. I'm like, I think I put my, I threw myself down on the ground again. Like I couldn't believe it. Like I'd both was ecstatic that I'd run the race of my life. and I'd done everything I wanted to do, and yet it didn't quite add up to enough. And Tommy's just like, let's go to Houston. Come to Houston. It'll be great. And I'm like, you're asking someone to reload some. I had spent a year preparing for the performance. So sure enough, 6 weeks later, we're in Houston, and this has been fun to write about because there was so much like internal turmoil. Like you can turn around with super shoes and race really well, but you have to like, you have to get your mind right. And it's really hard to get. I said to people, like, I spent 6 months leading up to CIM 2019 being like, I have no excuses, put excuses at bay. I'm like, when it gets hard at Houston, the number one excuse is going to be sitting right there in front of me. Like, how am I going to get past that? So I really worked on work is you just turn it over a million times until you get to the point where you're like, okay, I have another shot. And I was able to tap into the gratitude for the opportunity at hand because I had a lot of guys reach out to me after CIM and be like, dude, what you did was so cool. I wish I was in your position. I'm not for whatever reason. You got to take another chance. And I was like, okay, like, I guess I get to do the thing they wish they could do, which is the sentiment you want to channel when you're so tired. So yeah, ended up running 2:19:23 in Houston. It was a slightly windy day. And I'm like, when we turned into the wind with a 5K to go, I'm like, I'm still fucking flying. But like, I was running like 5:23s or something. And you're just, fuck.
That's, yeah, you need 5:17s.
Yeah,
no, 5:16s
at that point. Yeah. And then sure enough, the moment it's Houston, you tuck into the downtown. I run my fastest mile like at the very end, just like with the wind block. But I'm trying to write about the middle of that race because I think it was like the craziest thing I've ever done was like, you know, in workouts where you're like, oh, I'll just do one more rep, or you're like, I'll just run to the, I'll try to stay on pace to that tree, or I'll try to stick with my buddy for 10 seconds. Like, I think I spent an hour being like, one more stride, like two more strides. And it sounds like, it's funny. Sometimes I get choked up talking about it because it's like the most intense mental thing I've ever done.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, it's over. And then I was like, they're right there. This is the train. These guys are leading to the US Olympic trials. If you just, you're like, I give up. And then you're like, I'm 2 feet away from them. I'm still in the front row seat. And then sure enough, towards the end, when the pack started to fall apart, some guys do some great running and negative split the last 5K and get away. But people were like, I came out of a blackout and was like 20. And people were, I had some friends be like, dude, we didn't think you could make 2:20 the first time. And then the second time was crazy. And we definitely didn't think you were going to do it a third time. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's, I don't know. Yeah. I blacked out. What happened? Which is not true, but it's just, sorry. That's like my favorite story to tell, which is one.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And there's so much richness and nuance to just like what people say, what do you run for? And I think I was saying in that moment, so many things had gone right. And I truly thought of my training mates as they would be the first line of people. If I gave in, I would have had to tell them. I would have had to look Patrick in the eye and be like, I gave up. And people go to truisms and they'd be like, he would have loved you anyway, regardless. He's like friends for life regardless. And you're like, sure. But that's not what we're talking about. So I would have had to look my best friend in the eye and tell him I gave in. And that was more terrifying. That would kept me going.
Yeah.
If they were like, what went wrong? Seemed like he was on. I would have, and I don't even know if they would have asked, but I was just like, I kept picturing that. And so that's what kept me going.
So cool. And so this is what you're currently, I mean, obviously you've written pieces and you've referenced them through the last 15 minutes where you've explained the story, but this is all going into a book at some stage.
Yeah. So I'm writing, I've laid out like a 10 chapter book, which just to say my analogy, not to be a writer about writing, but I'm like, is like, oh, we're going to go climb a mountain. You're like, cool. When are we going to get in the car? And you're like, oh, we're walking there.
Like,
it feels like it's going to take that much work because I'm writing about, I think to fully appreciate that moment of my running career, I don't want people to feel like, oh, now I have to read about his high school running or his college running. But I think like any good book, there are stories in there that really built the wall that I was standing on. And so I think those are stories that are not just about me, but really about like, why was I able to be so filled with conviction and also strength in those years?
Mm.
And yeah, it makes it the richness of that story. I think I say to people like a lot of the running books in the world are written by former pros, have lived amazing journeys. or people who've overcome like incredible things, beaten cancer, come out of recovery, beaten abuse. And I'm like, a lot of us are in this middle zone where if we're lucky enough to just pursue this as a passion, I was fortunate enough to be able to go all in on this goal. And there's a lot of elements to like, where was I in? What was I going through in my life at that moment that allowed me to do that, but also drove me to do it, that I'm trying to explore?
Yeah, awesome. Truly looking forward to actually reading the whole thing, because in my mind, and I don't want you to, you can answer this now if you want to, but one of the questions I had in my mind as you were explaining that, I was like, hang on, wait, you've started at 236. What were you doing before that? So we can speak to that. But I just do want to bring up one particular Instagram post that I remember you posting that completely struck a chord with me and a lot of people. And because I know other people that, do you know the person I'm talking about? I've got it up right here. You can't actually see the phone screen.
Oh,
okay. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the particular part of it that's very powerful to me is this. You mentioned that people write to you around the world. They ask you about training advice and you say, if they're willing to listen and open to learn, I also suggest find friends who love this game as much as you do, whose passion often outpaces your own. Build a running life with them, stack miles through mud, sleet and rain together, because years from now, no one can know which one of you will still be healthy, who will be given the chance to shine, or if any of you will succeed on the stage. And when it comes down to it, when your brass tacks, legs in acid, time to hurt, it better be about more than you, because those final miles are too damn hard to run only for yourself. Yeah. And that came up because you were talking in the last half an hour about how you spent so much of that time between running for 230 down to 219 chasing friends, right? You're just there with your friends, just crushing it, just as hard as you can. Yeah.
Just going on as again, you're making me tear up because the photo I used for that, taken by Jody, was of my other friend, Peter. The dude has worked his ass off to break 245. He loves this game as much as anyone I know. We could talk about him for an hour and his lifelong love for it. He was injured at the time. He wasn't racing that day. And I could probably add multiple other guys that I'm close to that had kicked my ass every which way to Tuesday at different times and were not able to race that race.
Yeah.
It's overdramatic to be like, I do it for them, but I do it. I sure as hell don't. I like described, what am I going to do? Be like, I don't know. I got a little, sorry, feeling soft in the middle. They'd be like, are you kidding me? Like my Achilles is like falling off my body. I would kill to be in your position. And I, at times in those 3 years, I would finish like seventh in work in races. I'd have six guys kicking my ass. And then sure enough, life would leave one guy a different direction. One guy would just be going through some stuff and couldn't really put the training together. And so, yeah, that photo where Peter's almost tearing up and I'm just like, just in shock. Yeah.
I'm showing you the photo now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Peter has this like red eyes and I'm like, you could, it's like he just put down my dog or something. I'm like, and there's a photo that's not that one in the same moment where you can see on my Garmin, it is scrolled. It's not on there.
Okay.
I've never posted it. And it, you can see it just says like 219.02 on my watch.
I think
and,
I've seen it.
Yeah. And you're just like, when I think about people like Peter, I'm just like, I stayed in the Airbnb and we had totally geeked out about CIM, but I got up in the morning and I'm looking around and I, again, you're like not always aware of what's going on. I look around the Airbnb and I'm like, I'm the only one racing in this Airbnb. Patrick's here because he's going to pace part of it. Peter's here because he wouldn't miss it. Chris is here because he's stoked. He bought a ticket originally, but got injured and was going to not miss it. So you realize in some sense, in this made up, this is all just a game we play. All the hopes are riding on me and I gotta do it for them and do it for me. And like, yeah, they're gonna love me as friends regardless. And we still get beers together, but like the opportunity at hand is, and it, yeah, it was that idea of both. You don't know who's gonna get to do it really when it comes down to it. And I have some friends, I'm like, man, that guy's a good runner. One guy, Chris, who was injured that year, he ran 222 the previous year. And I always say to him, I say for years, we've always said like, good friends will bring up your other friend's best days. Yeah. Unbeknownst.
Yeah.
Just talk about the best days that, because he ran 222 that day and it was his second marathon and he blew up sky high and he easily could have run 230, but he was like, no, I just got to stick with it. So I'm like, man, I know I broke 219, but like that was, I ran 219.40 that day, but it was a day where it went well for me. Whereas things were going poorly for Chris, but he stuck with it and he ran 222. And I'm like, sometimes I'm like, that was the gutsiest race. So that's where I deeply appreciate. That's what I love about this sport. The closer you get to people's performances, the more you can really appreciate what it took for them to do that. And I think I've tried to write out this, like in those moments, both when we're cheering for people in races particularly marathons. And then afterwards, it just strips away so much of the facade of like life. And just like, I feel like people like give each other genuine hugs and cheer for each other and congratulate each other in a way that's a little bit deeper and more genuine than, hey, congrats on the new job. Thanks. So yeah, that's what I love so much. I think there's so much to pay off there in the story.
Totally. I think one of the reasons why we gone back and forth on DMs from time to time through the last however many years. And I'm always replying to your stories, side tangent here, but somewhat related. I'm a big effort-based runner, very aware and noticing people running to metrics and doing their heads in and all these sorts of things. And I feel like there's few people out there that I know, you're one of them, that sort of gets the thing I'm trying to get at. And it's because you put a story up like maybe 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you're a coach now. And you maybe you can tell the story about the athlete that sort of was having a hard time with overanalyzing some stuff.
I mean, it's this thing where, again, the beauty of my journey is like, people are like, what hardship have you gone through? I'm like, the hardest thing I've gone through as a runner was college, where I wanted it so badly, and the tighter I squeezed it, the worse it went. And that was 2 decades ago, when these people come to me and I want to be coached, and we're leading them through the journey. And I'm like, all in a few years, they've gotten up to speed on the sport. They've run a few marathons. They've PR'd a few times. They're getting up to speed on their Garmin and like different paces. And it's a lot to take on very quickly. And they start to judge themselves. They judge themselves at every single distance. They're like, okay, zone 2, I need to run easier. Fine, I can learn that. But then every other zone, they're like, they're literally doing stuff that I did as a sophomore in college. I mean, in college, we had less media. So we had these books of workouts. And you'd be like, cool. Did we talk about this? If you want to run 15 minutes for 5K, you should run 2x2 mile at this pace. And so what we would do is we go out and run 2x2 mile faster.
Yeah.
And because that must mean we were in 14:30 shape. Like, no. I would show up so fried to every race. So I got to learn, not to say we don't work hard in workouts for sure. And you, me, and Max were like debating, like, where is that line? But this idea of more and more metrics that are coming on board, we didn't even have GPS watches back then. So now it becomes so complex that I was saying to this athlete, and I put on stories just because I thought other people might appreciate it. It's just running. And he had realized, like, it's just running. There's no, I imagine if you're a rock climber or like a mountain climber, like there's real risk involved. But I think a lot of runners get so far inside our own head that it's to our detriment, and then can lead to our depression and just like losing love of the sport. So what I like to say is my teammates helped me over that marathon build in so many ways, not the least of which was like, we would just show up and be like 10 by 800. I think I've told this story. And like, a young guy would be like, what's the pace? And I'd be like, I don't know, man, 6:45. Like, we ran 95 miles last week. I'm like 2.5 days removed from a long run. We're going to see. And we knew it was like roughly 10K effort. But man, particularly if you have four to six training partners, some days someone's going to feel good. Sometimes someone else is going to feel good. And the other guy's going to be off the back. So it allows you, I think, a little more free room to roam and be like, I just need to be somewhere in the zone. And yeah, that was something it wasn't by accident that we built this group of people of good vibes who are working really hard. But a lot of my athletes who train solo, I'm like, hey, just so you know, don't judge yourself in the lead up. Don't try not to judge yourself in the workout. A lot. We're in an era where everyone's like headline statement. Like, it's about B+ workouts. And I'm like, oh, that's true. Like,
yeah.
There are a lot of these things that are true. But underneath, I find that there's so much as a writer. I describe myself as a writer because I do write, but I'm more just fascinated about what do you mean by that? And why, if that's so true and we all accept it, why is it hard to do? And that's, I think, the lead off for a lot of the writing I do. Mm-hmm. I'll put up stuff on Instagram where I'm like, what am I feeling? Oh, I'm feeling this thing that could file under like, it's about the journey, not the destination. But that's too much of a truism. What are we really saying there? And what's keeping us? That's where I think what makes it hard psychologically is what I think gets really interesting. And my wife, actually, I wrote a newsletter about this when that 2020 to 21, I was writing weekly newsletters just to keep my brain active in the pandemic. And I wrote a thing where my wife called me out. She was like, I don't feel like you're always writing about this like internal mental struggle, but do you actually talk shit to yourself in your head like that? I was like, I think we all do.
Yeah.
Just like, good workout 3 days ago. Today I'm a baby and like, I can't do it. And you're like, and I was trying to explain to her, maybe it could come off as overly dramatic for people outside the sport, But you want to find that internal hater, just ratchet it up a little higher, try to stick with someone you can't quite stick with, and then there you are again. And so it's like facing those demons and finding a way to turn the tide towards to what works for you. We were talking yesterday at the cafe. I've been thinking a lot about what works for me and what mental space I go to. I experience, like, I'm running Boston in 17 days, and I know there will be, like, for me, there will be a sadness. This is so fucking hard. Mile 18 is going to be so, if I've done it, it means that I'm going to arrive at mile 18. It's going to be really hard. And so I have to me, stay hard just doesn't work, because I'm like, stay hard, sweet. Seen 17 miles, like cracked open. It's once you reach mile 16 to 19, how am I going to create a flywheel that, like, I'm able to ride sadness back to gratitude and just be like, and people talk about, I dedicate a mile to a different person. And these are all great techniques, but to me, it's more of a feeling of, like, my best races. I've been like, when I get, like, literally nervous system elevated and psychologically depressed because I'm lacking oxygen, where am I going to go that is positive enough and not just from a, you got this, you're the champ, to, you're going to, I know myself well enough to know you're going to get sad, and how are you going to channel the gratitude that, like, this is what you asked for, and it'll be over in 35 minutes, even though 35 minutes sounds like forever. So yeah, that's a long answer for how I try to have these conversations with athletes, but I'm still honestly, like, getting to know them enough to know, like, where are they going to go? And I encourage them, think through, what are you afraid of? Like, where are you going to go? And yes, your loved ones will love you, but more meaningfully, your loved ones could love you and you could still give in. How are you going to channel that deepest drive? And this is, again, assuming I followed your journey deeply, because you, it's like, I stopped during this game right on this edge, right as you really picked it up.
Yeah.
And so then for anyone listening, like, I would message Matt. I've done this many times around the world. Like, have a good one tomorrow, man. And, like, you've run some hard races. And I've been like, fuck, I know elements of what he's doing. And then I've been super pissed at times because I'm like, shit, cramps got him again, because I felt like those are the moments that have kept you from being able to stay in the box at, like, mile 24.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on. And there's this thing I'm trying to write about, which is tricky to write about because I think it's real, but it sounds wrong. Someone like you is all I want to break 220. And I think as humans, we're wired to be like, when I hear people like, I want to break 220, we all think about things internally. So you're like, fuck that guy, he's not gonna break 220. And then you're like, good luck. And then you're like, maybe you could.
It could.
Then I would even say first couple times you don't, I'm like, see, it's fucking harder than you think. And then at some point, if you stay, there's this circle that it's not that many people that are inside the circle of where I'm like, I'm genuinely rooting for this person. And if they succeed, it doesn't detract anything from me. But man, if we know 1,000 runners, like, there is less than 10% that we're genuinely like, I feel bad saying it, but I think we all feel is like, there's any number of guys who are like, oh yeah, I'm going to go hit the trial standard. And then they blow up and I'm like, huh? See?
Yeah.
It's a lot harder than you think. But there are any, I aim to be more accepting of, and I think honestly, if I was still in, I think everyone listening can hear that I'm not able to channel the same training or paces that I used to. And so I am able to see it slightly clearer because I'm stepping out of it. Whereas when I was truly in it, I was like, all right, if you want to break 219, we're going to be next to each other. Let's roll. And I made like very instant friends with guys who shared those miles, right? Like you've done it around the world. So I think it's an interesting dynamic there, where even people we hadn't met in person, you start to like genuinely cheer for them.
Yeah, totally.
When you're like, man, this person's putting in work. I just want to see them succeed.
Yeah. Yesterday was funny at the cafe when you would just figure out that cramp.
I know.
You got to get to the airport in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes. But I want to ask you this one thing. If you could go back in time to 2018, 2019, 2020 era, specifically 2019, 2020, is there anything you regret or anything you would have done differently? Anything at all? Or do you think that just everything's played out as well as it could have? It sounded like, because I followed it at the time, obviously.
Yeah.
And now reflecting back, it seems like the team you had was pretty perfect for what you were trying to do.
I have yet to,
like,
I was so fucking good at fueling. It's crazy. I was super fortunate that fueling became a thing we started talking about in 2016, 2017.
Right.
And thank God for Eliud Kipchoge and Morten, like, really pushing that conversation in 2017. Because I, like, New York, marathon fall of 17, I sat with the CEO of Morton at some 20 person talk. And they were talking about like, we think that runners could take way more carbs. Like no one was talking about carbs. This was like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe they, we used to just chug a bunch of Gatorade and throw up at the end of the race. So I was, oh yeah. So the one thing I think I did wrong, because I've had a lot of time to think about it. I had elite bottles at CIM and I had Morton 320 in those bottles. And I also had gels on my body that I would, and I described it as climb the ladder would be my mantra. I would like every 4 miles, I'd be like, run 4 miles, grab a bottle at 2 miles, take a gel at 4 miles and repeat. Cause I couldn't think, it was my only, I wanted to run miles 20 to 26 ferociously. And I was like mentally skipping over the first 20. And so I was like, just try to contain your mind to the, do 4 miles, then do 4 miles, do that five times. And then you'll earn the right to race the last 10K. And when you only have so many surges in a marathon. And if I'm looking for 2 seconds, I would go over five times or six times. I went over and got my bottle and I ran too quickly to catch up to the pack.
It seems like a small detail, but it can be a big deal.
I think the fact that I remember that and I was like, oh, that was real hot. But then if you're running faster than the pack to catch them, the moment you settle in and to a 5:18 pace or 2:19 pace, I could buffer that lactic acid, which was a wonderful feeling. Like mile 8 of that race, I literally had this like transcendental, like, I don't feel like I'm touching the ground because we were in such rhythm. But yeah, I definitely think if there was any seconds to spare, again, like I wish the weather had been a little bit drier, but I think I messed up. It's just impatience. It's just like, you want to get back with your guys. And as much as you would tell someone else, like you should probably use about a quarter mile. Like I probably did it in 200 to 300 meters, you know, which I like remembering that because it's so real that it's tactical.
Yeah.
It's not, people who don't know running as well have been like, maybe you ran on the wrong side of the road. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I ran like with the pack dead tangents, like, or maybe you like, I don't know. People make up stuff of where I could have found. And I'm like, no, we don't do that. Like we were really focused for, and that's the hardest part is it's only a 2-hour and 19-minute endeavor. And yet it takes a tremendous amount of focus.
It's been so cool to hear these things like straight directly from you, because I've observed this journey from Instagram stories and articles and stuff. So to hear it just written out, like sitting next to you, it's so cool. But yeah, I really appreciate it.
There's so many variables though. I think the moment I write the nonfiction narrative long form, I'm sure there'll be people who are like, okay, man, but give us the deets. Give us the Reddit version. Because yeah, I follow people's training and I'm like, man, I hope this guy can run well. And then it'll say like the way it went wrong. And I'm like, don't do that. Couldn't find dinner. Don't do that. Get your dinner dialed. We had a guy we always laugh about. We were in the van and I'm like leading to CIM 2019. And I'm like, just really getting in the right mental space. And he's like, yeah, I had a bunch of raisins for dinner. Wasn't very hungry. This guy had been beating me in workouts like for weeks. And I'm like, I had said to him, I'm like, you're very young. If you run with me for 20 miles, like you will qualify. Like you just blow me away in the final. And sure enough, we'd actually sparred because I'm like, dude, you need to run more patiently. I ran the same splits as you. And I'm like, yeah, but you ran them like 20 meters ahead of me, surging off the front of the pack. You were leading the charge. I was just like, I had led packs previously in marathons. And I was like, I am going to tuck the fuck in and just run clean. And it takes a lot of patience to I catch it myself doing it even now. I just want to go to the front of this pack. I've lost you. I've liked the stories of you. And I'm like, how did he go all the way to that city across the world? And somehow he had to help lead the pack at
Fukuoka. Yeah. Because whenever I let someone else lead, it slowed down.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I wasn't doubting that you did. I was just like, oh, that's such a shame.
Yeah.
That's how that worked out. Because I was like, yeah, the moment you're leading the pack, you could still run more, but you're going to run less fast. It's going to burn off a lot of energy.
To be fair, you make a good point. And like in retrospect, I do wonder if I just sat back and gone slightly off the pace, maybe I could have closed really hard. Who knows? But yeah, I agree. And those little minor details, I think part of the reason why I do the podcast is to share these sorts of insights from people that have experienced it like you. Yeah. So this is so cool to share it.
And the more, talk about instant bonding, like when you share a marathon course with people, you turn to them after, congratulate, and maybe keep in touch with them, follow each other on Strava. Like the guys, those of us who finished within like 20 seconds of the qualifier at CIM, I'm like still in contact with many of them. And then a bunch of us went to Houston. Some of the guys, like bless their hearts, qualified at Houston. They got, I could see them. They were like 20, 30 seconds ahead. And I'm like, so I'm coming across the line. There's this video that Billy Yang, a YouTuber, shot where he shot in slow-mo and I just come across the line and I'm like, oh. And yeah, I was super excited for the guys who had qualified. But I'll just finish with, we sometimes say, not everyone says this, but people say, the pursuit of this is to find out how good I can be. And I'm like, man, but we, my joke is we always think, yeah, but I can be a little better. A lot of the guys I ran with that day years ago have gone on to run like 216, 214, and they were like messing up all sorts of variables. That one guy, I met him in Boulder. He was like, oh, I finished 8 seconds behind you at CIM. I bonked my face off that day and like barely, I blacked out and barely made it across the line. I'm like, yeah, you know, but you're in 219.20, like blacking out. And sure enough, like he's dialed in some things and now he runs 214. So you're like, okay. So I've looked back and I'm like, three data points. It's rare that you would get three data points, 219.40, 219.02, and 219.23. I'm like, maybe I found my, I always think slightly better conditions, slightly different pacing. I could have squeaked out a little more, but maybe I found it. And I have to be appreciative for that, even if the competitor in you is, oh, I could have run a little faster kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. This has been such a cool chat. I really appreciate your time. Finish off, where can people follow you moving forward?
So peterbromka.com has all my writing, and then Bromka at Bromka on Instagram. I always say I write short stories. I force short stories on people on Instagram with like a photo, and then I write longer essays. And I have a Substack where it's funny, like we're in this world of media and this and that. I just, as all the algorithms changed in 17, 18, 19, I was like, I'm just going to create a mailing list. And if every time I write a new essay, I'll just email it to people, which I think of as like the simplest way of just, and I welcome people like gromka@gmail.com. Send me your stories. Cause I think as we get to shorter and shorter form media, less and less people are writing about their experiences. There's just a golden era of people are writing blogs and sharing crazy journeys. I always appreciate that stuff. Yeah, I follow YouTube videos now. I subscribe to Substacks and follow people on Instagram, but I like when people, we talked about the overuse of authenticity, but I say to people like, I'm all in on the people who are like actually declaring a goal. My friend Patrick, who led me through this, is like, he's a man of fewer words. He'll say, you can't score if you don't have a goal. And I'm like, yeah, like I love, if they're like, I'm trying to break three and I'm all in and I can tell they're not like being cheeky about it and actually in 250 shape, then I'm like, cool, I want to see this guy throw down. So like when Mike Coe, Kafuzi, is like, even though he's in this rear over level, he'll run with a selfie stick, but man, he's running his face off and he's like kicking home and guys are cheering him on and he breaks three and you're like, hell yeah, man, that was awesome. I love that type of pursuit. And I'm like, I love connecting with people who are trying to do that.
Amazing. Once again, really appreciate your time, Bromka. Hope to have you on when the book's finished.
Yeah.
We're waiting for that. So stay tuned, everyone.
And, thanks so much.
Yeah, too easy.
Thanks for listening into this podcast episode, guys. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Peter Bromka. So for those not familiar, we've recently launched a new shareholders club where you can find more content from Sweat Elite, more exclusive articles, a new podcast series that we've recently started called Training Talk, of which was on the public side, which now is in the shareholders club, which is all about marathon training in a unique way, an approach that I'm taking this year that's much more speed-based. It's every single week, and you access a private podcast feed, which only Shareholders Club members can access. You access it every single week. And we have plenty more coming up in the very near future. You can join for $10 a month, which is only the cost of, I don't know, maybe three coffees a month at Starbucks or a lunch or something like that, or $99 a year. Of course, this is just a supporters club. It's to allow us to continue bringing content to you. Much of this content, especially on the video side, is pretty pricey, so we really appreciate all of our supporters. So if you're interested in joining us over there, you can find the link in the description of this podcast episode, or head over to sweatelite.co/shareholders, and you can sign up that way and access all of the new free content yourself. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate you.